Good afternoon. Welcome to the Don Briscoe Show, taking you home on a Friday afternoon. Enjoy the sunshine out there, folks, because we're looking for some more snow moving in again tomorrow. Well, a couple of shout-outs before we get underway today. First of all, a big congratulations to Paul Sather, Coach of the Year of the Northern State Wolves, and they're headed to tournaments. And we're trying to get Paul to come out and be a guest on the show, but right now he's wrapped up in basketball. And then also a shout-out to Miranda Ristow, Player of the Year for the Northern basketball team for the Wolves. Again, congratulations to both of you. If you're a regular, you know we always like to start the show with a little joke, so today's story. An Arizona couple, both well into their 80s, go to a sex therapist office. The doctor says, "What can I do for you?" The man says, "Will you watch us have sexual relations?" The doctor raises both eyebrows, but he's so amazed at such an elderly couple's asking for sexual advice that he agrees. When the couple finishes, the doctor says there's absolutely nothing wrong with the way that you guys have sex. He thanks them for coming. He wishes them good luck. He charges them $50 and says goodbye. Next week, same couple returns, asks the sex therapist to watch again. He agrees. He's a bit puzzled. This happens several weeks in a row. Couple makes an appointment, do their thing, pay the doctor, leave. Finally, after 3 months, the doctor says, "Hey, I'm sorry, but I have to ask, just what are you trying to find out?" The man says, "Oh, we're not trying to find out anything. She's married, so we can't go to her house. I'm married, we can't go to my house. The Holiday Inn charges $120 for a room. The Hilton charges $160. We do it here for $50, and Medicare pays $43 of it, leaving our net cost at $7. Shame on you for laughing at that. We'll have our guest Susan Szymanski, author of a great book called Maharishi and Me, in just a moment. I want to tell you folks where I bank here in Aberdeen at the Great Western Bank. They have two locations on 6th Avenue. They also have locations in all these nearby cities: Gettysburg, McIntosh, Millbank, Mobridge, Redfield, Rossel, Watertown, and Webster. They're a member of FDIC, and they've got all the things you would expect a bank to have: online banking, mobile banking, bill paying, mobile check deposit. And ask about how you can get $50 free cash also. That's Great Western Bank, member FDIC. Good afternoon, Susan Szymanski.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Now, I have to tell you before we start, I told you off the air, but my listeners know that I read a lot of books, over 100 a year, and at the end of the year in my Christmas letter, I recommend 3 books. And though it's only February, yours is going to be one of the 3 books. I found it so interesting. You're a very descriptive writer, and because I'm old enough at 77 to remember playing the Beatles' first songs and remember Transcendental Meditation and the Maharishi's influence. So people that have gone through that generation, I highly recommend this book. You can find it really fascinating. Susan, you gave me several questions that I could have asked you about the book, but what I do is I start at the beginning, and then what I do with these books is I underline little places in them, and I'm going to ask you to comment on places that I've underlined. But before I start, give people, if you would, just because I find so many people, I'm actually surprised that when I say TM or Transcendental Meditation, if they're, oh, I want to say younger than 55 or 60, they don't know what I'm talking about. So please explain what it is and how it came about in this country, because it did, the Maharishi did take our country by storm. So a little bit about what Transcendental Meditation is all about, and then the Maharishi.
Well, in 1959, Maharishi arrived in America and started one of his first world tours. And before that date, there was no meditation, there was no mantra, there was no yoga. Nothing like that existed in this country. And within 10 years, he had made those into household words. And what he brought was transcendental meditation, which is a meditation method where the person sits down in a chair, closes their eyes, and uses what's called a mantra, which is a sound, a Sanskrit word. And by repeating that word silently, it takes the mind away from the outer world and into the inner world, away from the noise of the mind and into a settled state of awareness where the person experiences what's called transcendental consciousness or unbounded awareness, which is a state of expansion, deep relaxation, wholeness, oneness. It's an ecstatic inner feeling of bliss consciousness. And it really works, and I think anyone can probably do it.
Well, again, I don't want to get ahead of myself in the book, and we're going to talk about things and how these experiences happened to you, and I believe every word that you say in the book, and I find it interesting. A couple other questions before I get into the book and some things I've underlined. First of all, was transcendental meditation around for a long time in India before we heard about it in this country? By that I mean hundreds of years or relatively recent?
Well, the reality is the use of mantras has been around for as long as we know that India has existed. It's an ancient method of repeating these words or these sounds. What Maharishi did is he, instead of people chanting the mantras, this is a deeper meditative technique where people are repeating it silently and then letting it go and allowing the mind to settle down, which is something that I don't think was really taught in India before Maharishi either conceived it or learned it from his guru, I don't know which, but it was something that was different and kind of revolutionary.
I'm going to take a quote from at the beginning of Chapter 3. Your dates here are 67 to 68, and Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, says, "Man was not born to suffer, he was born to enjoy. It is the natural tendency of the mind to seek a field of greater happiness. The purpose of life is the expansion of happiness." Now, you start out and you say, back in my hippie pad with walls psychedelic purple, green, and orange, you were really into the scene in San Francisco. You were a flower child. I'm not saying anything that you didn't say in the book, but you were the true flower child, the true hippie. Everybody was sleeping with everybody back then. You dropped LSD. You did the whole nine yards of the hippie movement, correct?
Absolutely. I was a hippie all the way. I was a flower child, yes.
Now, were you, when you began this, were you about 18 or 19?
I began transcendental meditation at age 18.
Okay. And what drew you to that commune to start with?
Well, the fact is, you know, I was hippie. It was the 60s. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And those of us who were flower children, people don't realize that it wasn't just all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. In fact, we were really seriously seeking spiritual awakening and spiritual development. And our gurus at the time were Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass, and they were doing a Harvard psilocybin program, and they were teaching us about altered states of consciousness, and they were telling us turn on, tune in, drop out, and they introduced us to the Tibetan Book of the Dead through their work, The Psychedelic Experience. That was their book.
Did you meet Timothy Leary, did you say, or not?
Yes, I went to a lecture with Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert one time. You know, I was in the audience.
Okay. Now, so, when we talk about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, another part that you left out, and I guess part of the movement was to rebel against the war in Vietnam, correct? I mean, that was also in the mix, wasn't it?
It was in the mix, but the flower children were more into the experience of higher states of consciousness and the experience of make love, not war. They wanted to change the world through higher consciousness rather than political action. There obviously was a segment that were political activists, but flower children weren't really. There were two different segments. There were the activists, political activists, and there were the flower children.
Okay, now I want to go. This is where I think it all starts for you. I'm on page 20 of your book, and the Maharishi says, "Tonight we'll go to our rooms. Tomorrow we'll only come out twice for lunch and dinner. The rest of the time, we'll sit comfortably and meditate. Sit either in a chair, on your bed, or on the floor, however you're comfortable. Stick to the routine. Tomorrow night, when I see you next, we'll have a contest to see who has meditated the most hours. Now tell us, you come out for lunch, and what happens to you physically?
Well, for the first time in my life, I'm feeling really relaxed, and I'm feeling something I never felt before, and that is happy. And that was due to all the meditation I was doing on this meditation retreat down in at Silomar in Monterey, California.
So do you feel that first overwhelming presence, I mean, I have the feeling reading the book that had a tremendous impact, and I guess my question is, was it because of the meditation before, or was actually physically seeing the Maharishi?
Actually, Maharishi was not on that retreat. It was taught by Jerry Jarvis, who was my meditation teacher. I first met Maharishi in 1967, and then I went to Rishikesh, India, to go to the teacher training class in 1969 until 1970.
Now, 1970. Now, you know, one of the things that I read, first of all, we should tell you folks that a lot of people back then, famous stars, were into TM, the Doors, the Beatles, Mick Jagger, Marianne Faithfull, the Beach Boys, Donovan, Grateful Dead, Mia Farrow, Shirley MacLaine, and more. And we'll talk about some of those people in time to come here. But one of the things that I get from the book is that you evidently there's not one class or two classes, and I'll get into this a little bit later, but one of the things that I had a problem with was the fact that you actually became, my words, not yours, a slave to the Maharishi. Whatever the Maharishi requested of you, you did as if God was asking you. And I'm not putting you down, but I'm saying throughout the book there, and we're going to cite places where you do a job or you do a chore, you do whatever he asks, and you might not hear from him for a day or a week or a month, but you were so obedient. The first thing that comes to my mind is 50 Shades of Grey without the sex, but how do you get how do you get so involved with someone to have that kind of control over you? And you weren't the only one, I might add.
I was very devoted to him. I loved him in a spiritual way. And the fact was that when you were in his presence, you felt these incredible waves of love and waves of bliss. I know it's hard for people probably in the West to even fathom that kind of energy, but he had that kind of energy that exuded, that you would receive by osmosis, that was so powerful. And I was just inspired to be his disciple and to do what he asked. And I think maybe people in the West might understand that if they read the New Testament and see how Jesus' disciples were with him. And then they would realize there is a master-disciple relationship.
Susan, may I ask, were you a very religious person before you met Maharishi?
I don't think so, although I really loved going. I was Jewish. I loved going to the temple. I loved the prayers. And I did really have a keen desire to hear the voice of God, to experience God directly. But I wouldn't call myself religious. I definitely didn't follow the religion like that, like a person who's extremely religious. No, not at all.
Okay. Now, on page 33, you said, if feel the presence of God around you, and there's a quote here, please describe, you're talking to Maharishi, where we go after death. And he says, I think he says, the cause of rebirth is the unfulfilled state of life. The inner man, dweller in the body, is like a dweller in a house. When the house collapses, he collects all that is precious and runs out the door. Whatever is last idea at the time of death decides the direction. If we remember a dear cat, we go to life of cat. Whatever has been dearest in life, what we cherish most. Physical machinery starts fading, and what fades last will be deepest impression. In meditation, we store more and more deeply the impression of transcendental consciousness. The impression becomes so clear it becomes permanent and dominates all others. Does that mean that you believe and he believes in reincarnation?
Yes, I definitely believe in reincarnation, and Maharishi does. He's a Hindu. Hindus believe in reincarnation, definitely.
So you bought all of that. Now let me see. The you said here. I'm on page 34. There's just so much in your book that I love here. Well, the seminar. The seminar continues. And was this your first seminar? I think I'm on page 34. The seminar continues. Lots of meditation. Lots of lectures. And you said lots of sex. And I guess a lot of us saw the Maharishi and saw the crowds around him. We know the Mia Farrow story. And what I'm saying is, sex was not something he promoted at all. He basically promoted celibacy. Am I right?
He certainly did. He promoted celibacy. He talked about celibacy and the advantages of it. And he tried to get the people who were students on his retreats, like that you're talking about, the Squaw Valley retreat right now, actually, in 1968.
Right, and that was the one with a lot of hippies, right? A lot of flower children.
A lot of hippies and a lot of, rock stars. The Doors were there. Robbie Krieger, John Densmore, they were there. As a matter of fact, I had a crush on Robbie Krieger. So that's talking about that in the book. So in any case, the students were having a lot of sex. But Maharishi always tried to get people to curb that during the meditation courses, and not too successfully, because hippies, they did what they did.
But although he promoted celibacy and when you were around him, I guess for the most part tried to live this life of celibacy, it did come out after his death, didn't it, that he wasn't celibate and did have sex with several people. Am I right?
Yes, there are several women who claim that Maharishi had sex with him, and I know these women from, 30 years I've known these women, and they're very credible witnesses. I actually believe every word they say, and even though I was very shocked by it, because I could never imagine Maharishi having sex with anyone, I still can't imagine it. It's too weird in my mind, because he certainly didn't present himself that way to the public.
Okay, my guest is Susan Shumsky. She has a brand new book. It's a brand new book just out called Maharishi and Me. And folks, is all I can tell you, it's a fascinating book, page after page. We'll be back with our guest after we take a quick time out. Want to talk to you folks about Mark Melhoff Insurance. And when I say insurance, I'm not talking car insurance, and I'm not talking home insurance or boat insurance. I'm talking about insurance for you, the person. I mean health insurance. I'm talking term life. I'm talking home health care, nursing care. They can handle all those things, universal life. They are the experts in this town, and they have put me into, I'm on my 11th year with them, and I'm on with my fourth program. The reason they change companies, because depending on my drugs and whatever, they find the cheapest possible plan for me. I highly recommend any of the four people there. Mark Melhoff, his daughter Megan Sell, Lori Baumgartner, Lauren Sear, any of them can help you. Mark Melhoff Insurance here in Aberdeen. Hey, have you got anything special coming up? Maybe a special anniversary? Some friends in town, you want to take them out to the nicest restaurant in the city? Of course, that would be Mavericks. Nobody offers a bigger selection of steaks. The New York Strip, the Maverick, the Sirloin, the Prime Rib, Steak Kebab, Steak and Shrimp, Filet Mignon, Ribeye, Chop Steak. They've got them all. And nobody, I mean nobody, has a selection of steaks. Nobody has the atmosphere. And nobody has the quality.
Another Briscoe factoid.
Male orb weaver spiders give back rubs to their mates so they don't get eaten. And oysters can change genders back and forth. Let us quickly remind you before we go back to our guest, Susan Shumsky, author of Maharishi and Me, that next Friday here on the Don Briscoe Show, it's going to be a full 2 hours of Oscars. Two of my favorite Hollywood insiders will give their predictions on the major races, based on what they're hearing from members of the Voting Academy. In hour two, my guest will be Dick Gutman. He is a voting member of the Academy, and I think he's had one of the greatest books written about Hollywood called Starflacker. It is available at the library. And in the first hour, I'll have Beverly Gray on. Her latest book, The Seduction of Mrs. Robinson, is also available at the library, and they've both been on my show several times. Our guest this afternoon is Susan Shumsky, author of a great book that I highly recommend called Maharishi and Me. I'm at the beginning of Chapter 5, and it says, "The seemingly sane stranger at the Guggenheim turned to me and suddenly declared out of nowhere," now he's talking to Susan, "meeting you today is no accident. I was sent here to give you a message." "You say sent here," I thought. "By whom?" "The man you're going to study with in India is not as he appears to be. You must cancel your trip now. Do not go to this ashram. You're not the first person I've told. I've warned others on their way to his ashram. I was sent to them also." You didn't know. Was he nuts? What's the deal? But you ended up going. And first of all, am I pronouncing ashram right?
Yeah, that's fine. Ashram or ashram. That's close enough, yeah.
Okay. And I when I talk about being such a wonderful descriptive writer, I'm just picking one paragraph to give you guys an idea. "The pungent perfume of New Delhi, marigolds, turmeric, burning cow dung, jasmine, urine, mustard seed, melting candle wax, feces, coconut, saffron, sandalwood incense, coriander, hot ghee, cumin, boiling peanut oil, water buffalo milk, beedies, Indian cigarettes, fennel, and pan, spiced chewing tobacco filled the air." That gives us such a sense of being there in India. Now, that was your first trip to India, correct?
It was, yes.
And were you...
I was only 20. I was only 21 years old, yeah. It was really one of my first trips outside of the country.
Right. And now, you met twice daily. And you say in there were 108 students from 35 different countries. Tell us, what is it? I mean, it looks like you had a set routine. You'd hear now, were these lectures to train you to teach TM or just to further your own knowledge?
Mostly the lectures were about furthering our own knowledge and going deeper into the meditative experience and explaining the meditative experience. And experiencing it, really, although we experienced it mostly inside our rooms in silence. And then we would come out and there would be one or two lectures a day with Maharishi.
Now, tell us the story just briefly where you were sitting in an audience. What I'm looking for is the details where Maharishi has this rose and he's picking off the petals. And near the end of it, I think that's a pretty amazing story.
It is. I mean, he was talking about the sap in the rose. He often would talk about the sap inside the flowers, and he would use a flower to illustrate his point when he would talk about subtle experiences and subtle truths of creation. And he said that the sap underlies the flower, the sap permeates the flower and underlies it, and that's like consciousness that underlies everything, or universal reality, whatever you want to call it, the absolute. So he was talking about the difference between the absolute and the relative, and how the relative manifests out of the absolute. In other words, how duality comes out of oneness. And as he was doing that, he was plucking the petals of the rose. He kept plucking one after the other as he was talking and talking and talking. And the rose petals, they disappeared. I mean, they weren't there. After Maharishi stood up and started leaving the place, there were no petals anywhere. They weren't inside his clothing. They didn't fall from his lap. They just disappeared. And so that was his way of illustrating how the relative comes out of the absolute.
That is an amazing story. Now, speaking of what I would call magic, I'm jumping ahead in the book here, but this relates to it certainly. We all remember the famous magician David Henning. And tell us a story, if you would, about David's relationship with Maharishi and the whole story, how he got so wrapped up, sold his magic. Tell us that whole story quickly, if you can.
Yeah, Doug Henning was the most famous magician of his time. you know, he appeared on television. He had all these specials on TV. Everyone knew Doug Henning's name. He was so very popular. And he got involved with Transcendental Meditation. His assistant at the time was Barbara DeAngelis. She went on later to divorce him, and she became a very famous relationship author. But Doug Henning went on to marry another woman named Debbie Douillard. And then he went off to be with Maharishi and to live with him on his staff. And he was going to try to do this thing called Veda Land. Veda Land was a theme park that he was trying, the Maharishi and he were trying to create.
And go ahead, continue about how they were going to build a park and how David sold his stuff to the other musician. Go ahead.
Yeah. So they were going to build two parks, one near Niagara Falls and one near Disney World in Orlando. It never came to be, although when I was there on staff with Maharishi, they used to talk about it quite a bit. And Doug became so involved with Transcendental Meditation and with Maharishi that he gave up magic altogether, even though he was such a charismatic, amazing magician and so popular. He ended up actually selling his tricks to David Copperfield, and unfortunately he died of cancer at a young age in his 50s.
I'm going to go back now to page 71, and we're talking about you're saying Gregory and Keith picked us up. We drove to Hotel Carina, where this is the part that just shocks me, where several hundred students meditated 10 to 12 hours per day for 9 months. I mean, it almost seems like torture to me. I mean, like being, no, I mean, like, and I don't mean that in an offensive way, but I mean, like a POW, that, I mean, I'm a Catholic and I go to church once a week for an hour, but I just can't imagine me going down to Sacred Heart for 10 or 12 hours a day and praying. So please explain that. I mean, and then you talk about, I can't find the place in the book right now, but later on in the book, I want to say that at some point you're in a room for either, you can help me here, it was 4 months, 7 months, whatever, and all you did, you call it rounding, and I guess it's meditating and praying, but what I'm saying, you did this for, was it 4, 7, or 9 months, and you never left your room, and only two meals a day were left outside your room? This puzzles me. You just have to explain this to me.
Okay. First of all, the time that I spent in my room was 8 weeks, actually.
Okay.
I spent inside my room and didn't come out. Was it 8 weeks? Yeah, it was 8 weeks. And I had the food brought to the door. And the 4 months, that was being in silence, where I did not speak to anyone for 4 months. But during that period of time, I came out every day and went to Maharishi's lectures and ate in the, you know, regular dining room and everything. It's just I didn't speak.
Okay.
Maharishi encouraged silence, where you didn't say anything to anyone during those long meditation courses. And, yeah, we used to meditate really a lot. We used to meditate many, many hours a day. Even the Beatles, when they went to India and stayed in Rishikesh, there were periods of time during their stay there when they meditated 8 hours a day. And I know that's hard for people to grasp or to even imagine doing, but when you're having really blissful internal experiences, believe it or not, it's possible to sit there that long and meditate.
Okay, folks, you got to get this book. It is fascinating. Now, at one point, the Maharishi, again, this is spreading throughout Europe. It's not only in our country. And he's holding these seminars or lectures or whatever you how you want to refer to him. But I'm saying he took in a lot of dough. And as I understand from the book, you people were transferring this money to Swiss bank accounts for him. And one of the guys who had $50,000 in a suit, or so much, I forget how the amount, but had it in a suitcase, was stopped in Spain, I believe, was arrested. But didn't the Maharishi then have somebody deliver a brown envelope to Franco that had $50,000 in cash and got the guy out?
That's right.
Boy, you have had quite a life, Susan.
Yeah, that really happened. There's some really crazy things in the book that happened that are just beyond, just really crazy. It was a wild time, what can I say?
But the other part I'm a little confused about, and answer this for me, because there's times where you talk about these large sums of money, and there are times where you stayed in rather dumpy places, maybe the Maharishi didn't, but what I'm getting at, in retrospect, do you think he was partly about the money? Because a lot of money was involved.
Yeah. The fact was there were thousands of people that he was teaching teacher training classes to. And when you're teaching teacher training classes, and by the way, the classes were very reasonably priced. They weren't expensive at all. He kept the prices really incredibly low so that more people could attend. And I worked in finance, so I know what happened with the money. And believe me, there was more money going out than coming in. Actually, it wasn't quite that bad. But, yeah, there was no real profit taking place. The money was going out as fast as it was coming in because it's expensive to rent ginormous hotels in Europe. And, by the way, they were very luxurious. There was nothing dumpy about any of the places we stayed in Europe.
Now, I have to, again, I know I'm not following the book like I usually do, but you remind me of things because there's so many places I marked in this book. And before we end, folks, we are going to talk about the Beatles. But real quickly here, you talk about I underlined it, that you got by on $25 a month. You said you paid for all your personal needs. It's a good thing I didn't wear makeup. It was hard enough to keep stocked in sanitary napkins. I mean, did you honestly get by on $25 a month?
I had to.
Wow.
And I didn't have any choice. I was not a wealthy person. I didn't have any money at all.
But, I mean, that just seems like incredible to live on that amount, even back then. Now, another story that rings a bell when we talk about these accommodations, the Maharishi had something going on in, I believe it was Switzerland, and there weren't enough rooms for all the people coming in, and he had assured everybody they'd have a private room. So I want to say, as I can remember from the book, he contacts you or calls you and says, Susan, I want you to line up private rooms for everybody. Now, I was in Switzerland about a year and a half ago, and I know how tiny the hotels are. There aren't 80 and 90-room hotels. They're small. But here's the kicker that I want to ask you about. You said you got everybody taken care of. It took all night to do it. But you said, the Maharishi said, as they always tell people in India, whatever the retailer says, offer him half as much. Now, please tell me, I've been there, please tell me, you couldn't talk those Swiss hoteliers into knocking half off, could you?
I did get a discount. It wasn't half off, but I was able to get a discount for some of the rooms. I was the hotel manager for this ginormous hotel in Interlaken. That's what you're talking about. I called the Victoria Jungfrau Hotel.
Okay, we're going to be back to talk to our guest about the Beatles and John Gray here in just a moment. Want to take another quick time out and talk to you folks about sale prices going on right now at the Hitchin Post. Hey, winter's not over, as you well know, by the snowstorm, and we're getting more tomorrow. Right now, there's 30% off winter jackets, winter gloves, winter hats at the Hitchin Post. And remember those bog boots at 20% off. They're terrific for this kind of sloshy weather. They have men's, ladies, and children's sizes. And the famous Stormy Cromier hats are 30% off. These are kind of really cute hats. You gals that have a ponytail will like them. There's a place in back of the hat that lets your ponytail hang out. These are the very best hats around, U.S. made. Remember, sale prices, the Hitchin Post, always the place for all Western gear in this town, the Hitchin Post.
Another Briscoe factoid.
A sneeze travels out of your mouth at more than 100 miles per hour. Our guest is Susan Shumsky. Folks, if you want a really interesting book, that is filled for fascinating stories. I highly recommend Maharishi and Me. We'd mentioned the Beatles, and I don't want to run out of time before we at least get to the Beatles. Everybody that's old enough remembers when the Beatles went to India, when the Maharishi was on everybody's lips, and they were probably, would it be fair to say, probably his most famous celebrities that went to the Maharishi, and he had many. Susan? Did we lose Susan?
No, I'm here. Okay. I'm here. Oh. I had you on mute. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. My question was...
Yes, I had. Oh. I got the question. Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, they were definitely the most famous disciples of Maharishi.
And tell us, when you say disciples, some bought into it, some didn't. I believe, if I've got the story right, and I want you to tell it, but I believe at one time... John left with some derogatory things and didn't believe in, thought he was a faker, and near the end basically changed his mind. But let's go through each one of the Beatles if we could. Let's start with what was John's reaction?
Well, yes, John was very disillusioned, and he walked away in a huff, and he wrote that song Sexy Sadie about Maharishi. And so, yeah, he was very angry, but later... You know, he changed his mind. He wasn't quite so angry. George, he was very, very disillusioned and heartbroken, frankly.
Who was? And did you say George?
George Harrison. I
have to interrupt you here because I thought George was the one that really took to this mysticism and the Hinduism and yoga and transcendental meditation more than any of the other Beatles. Am I wrong?
He certainly did, definitely, and he had wonderful. They all had wonderful experiences with transcendental meditation, and they were all very keen on it. And but when George and John walked out of India in a huff, George was very sad and very disillusioned. Yes, he was. And later on, he changed his mind completely and went back and was very supportive of transcendental meditation near the end of his life.
What, did you get to meet, were you there at the time any of the Beatles were there?
No, I was not there at the same time. I kept applying for the teacher training course over and over and over, and they kept telling me I was too young, too young, too young. And finally, they did accept me on the course, but that was later in 1969.
Okay.
And then I went to India then.
Okay, we didn't finish with the other two Beatles. I don't see much about the response of either Ringo or Paul. Did they have basically, you know, you're saying they all basically accepted it, but did any of them kind of continue with it through their life?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Ringo and Paul have said that they continued meditating and they've enjoyed it. Ringo certainly didn't do it regularly. Actually, Ringo and Paul certainly didn't do it regularly. George continued it probably more than any of the other Beatles.
When we speak of famous people, what caught my attention, I was real surprised that he was a devotee of the Maharishi's, was John Gray. In fact, he was quite close. There were certain boys, I think you call them skin boys, and that was a special relationship they had with the Maharishi.
Exactly. John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, very famous best-selling author, he was one of the skin boys. Skin boys are young men who carried the deer skin around. In other words, they were always with Maharishi, and they always had the deer skin that Maharishi sat on. It would carry it for him whenever Maharishi would go from here to there. So John Gray was one of those, and he was just so charming and so adorable. I loved John, and I still love him, actually. I think he's an amazing person, and he was always so kind and generous and gentle.
Okay, I have to interrupt here just to say this, folks. I think that John Gray's book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, I think, this is just my opinion, is the best book I have ever read on men-women relationships. And I honestly think that it would be a wonderful gift to give anybody just getting married, because I think it would help a whole lot. Anyway, that's my two bits on John Gray and Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Now, another place in the book you talk about where Maharishi says, because of the devaluation of the, I think it's the peso, that he says we have to charge people more money. and he wants mm-hmm. you to go through, I want to say, roughly 2,000 or 2,800 receipts, find out if people are paid up to date or not. And he tells you this at about midnight or 2 a.m. and wants it done by 8 the next morning.
That's right.
I can't imagine the suffering you went through. I did the math on this, Susan, and you're talking about doing one every 15 minutes. I mean, 15 seconds.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But how do you, and then you said the next day he didn't ask about it. How do you put up with stuff like that?
Well, actually, in that case, the next day he definitely did ask about it, because I had to have that done in time for him to start making people initiators the next day. So it was definitely a deadline that had to be met. But in many cases, there were deadlines, supposed deadlines, that were met, and then he would just ignore. Once you went back to him, he would just ignore it.
Well,
so he was a very inscrutable kind of person.
I guess I can understand at the beginning your fascination and your belief, but through all these many years and all the places in the book where quote, I want to say you were his best friend, that's an exaggeration, but you were close, then maybe months go by or years go by, he has no contact with you, and then you get a message out of the clear blue and do what he asks. Does anybody question the fact that you were so devoted to him?
I was definitely very devoted to him. I believed that others who were on the international staff were as devoted to him. But then one day, one of the people who had worked on staff with me told me a very stunning statement. She said that everybody thought of me as being the most devoted disciple, and that I was so obsessed with Maharishi, I was like a love-struck teenager. And I didn't know that about myself, so I was really shocked when she told me that.
But before I take this last time out, did the Maharishi ever try to make a move on you?
Definitely not, thank God. If he had, I would have run so fast, so quickly, so far. And
well, you know, I guess I can't help but feel, hey, you were a flower child. You certainly weren't a virgin. It's like, hey, here's this nifty-looking chick that adores everything I say. But you've answered the question. We're going to take our last break and then be back with a really entertaining guest, Susan Shumsky, author of Maharishi and Me. Hey, folks, are you looking to save money? I mean real money. I'm talking about 50%. Yeah, that's a lot. And I'm talking about saving on something fairly expensive. I'm talking about a mattress. Right now at Melchow's, every one of their mattress floor models are on sale at 50% off. And in the sleep department, they have, I want to say, I'm guessing here, about 18 different models set up. So you got a wide selection of choices. And the mattress is Serta, one of the best names in the business. Don't forget to visit their website, too, where you can find out all the things that Melchow's had. Their website is melchowfurniture.com. Easy to remember, melchowfurniture.com. And remember, in-store, you have no financing for 12 months, zero interest. Best furniture always in the city. They've been around since I was a kid in this town, and no other furniture store can say that. Melchow's here in Aberdeen. You're back here on the Don Briscoe Show. We've got about 3 minutes to go. Susan, we no longer have a bookstore in this town, but in addition to Amazon.com, is there any place else, or do you have a website they can go to get the book?
I would suggest that they get it online.
Okay.
At Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Target.com, Walmart.com. Those are carrying the book, and it's just easiest to get it that way. My website is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org.
This is one of the more entertaining and interesting books. I mean, page after page, she surprised me with things she said. If you were around at the time of the Maharishi Transcendental Meditation. By the way, real quickly here, I I was a DJ back in the time when you talked about Donovan. I used to work with one of the Beach Boys before he became the Beach Boys. But were you around when either Donovan or the Beach Boys were around?
Yes, of course. Mike Love used to come all the time to the courses when I was working on staff, so I saw him a lot of times. Donovan came to Berkeley, California to get his meditation checked one time, and I was the meditation checker who checked his meditation, even though I was only 18 years old. But, you know, he was probably only a few years older than me at the time. He was very young, too.
Yeah, I remember Donovan. I remember Mellow Yellow was the song I remember playing by Donovan. But boy, that goes back a long, long ways.
Is there
anything that I didn't ask you that you want to add before we close things out?
Well, you know, it was a very unusual experience to be very close to a spiritual master from India. And what people don't really tell you about the spiritual path is that the guru is doing something like what you might call open ego surgery on you. Maharishi used to always say that his disciples were like pieces of wood, and he was like the carpenter. And okay. In fact, from being around him for so long, I made so many improvements to myself, not only all the skills that I learned being on international staff, but also gaining a lot of self-confidence and self-empowerment from the experience of being with him.
Susan, I want to interrupt just because I've only got about 30 seconds left, and I did want to ask you this. There are different stages to transcendental meditation. I believe the highest stage, I'm not sure the name, but actually you can experience an out-of-body experience. You can actually levitate and look down at yourself. Did this ever happen to you?
Okay, so that idea of levitation is not an out-of-body experience. It's not leaving the body at all. It's actually lifting off the ground and then falling back down. And they call it the TM Siddhi program, and Maharishi called it flying, even though we weren't flying. We were just basically bumping along, sort of hopping like frogs along foam rubber.
Susan, I got to wrap things up. I got 3 seconds left again. The book is Maharishi and Me. The author is Susan Shumsky. Have a great weekend, and thank you for a wonderful interview.
Thank you for inviting me.